This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Until this year, you probably never heard of a double dissolution election. But that all changed around Easter time when the Prime Minister announced that he'd be calling one on April the 18th if some of his party's legislation doesn't get through Parliament. Well, April 18 is nearly here. Monday is the big day when this political media circus comes to a conclusion and we find out if we're going to have an early election or not. One party that's quietly hoping we do is Fred Niles' group, the Christian Democratic Party. They say that an early double dissolution might actually help them to get a senator into federal parliament for the first time in history. Paul Green is one of the two CDP senators currently in power in New South Wales, and he's on the line now. Paul, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Claire. It's nice to be with you.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but just to recap for anyone who's confused, a double dissolution is an unusual kind of election where we vote for all of the MP seats and all of the senators' seats at once instead of just half the Senate. Is that right?
Good. That's correct.
Okay. Cool. So the Prime Minister has been really frustrated with the current Senate blocking a whole lot of legislation. He was also very scathing of how the current Senate actually got voted back in 2013. So he's changed the laws around how the election will actually run. Can you explain that in layman's terms, the difference now when an election goes ahead?
The laws have changed virtually that people used to be able to just put a one above the line in a federal Senate election. Or you could number all the squares underneath the line, but now you'll be able to do 1 to 6 above the line, and secondly, you'll be able to do, my understanding is, 1 to 6 below the line or more if you want to choose every single person. The other important thing is that the former arrangement is that the parties would choose. So they would sign a document saying where all the preferences would go. So if you gave them a number one, basically if they did not win, they could allocate where your number one vote went to. Now it'll be in a situation that you can put 1 to 6. And so that means you're saying where your number one vote goes if your first preference doesn't get in or your second preference doesn't get in. And that means that basically a person who has a desire to get a particular team in can be sure if they lost that they're more likely supporting another team that is close to their political views.
It seems to me like actually a more ethical way of running the election.
Well, yes and no, and this is what the controversy is. Yes, in terms of the voter has returned the opportunity of the power of their vote back to them, at least up to 6 spaces. The second part of it is, we at least you had to have parties that agree where they would receive that preference, that first preference from. So parties would be doing deals, and obviously you've got the preference whisperer in play there, and he would bring a whole bunch of people together saying that if we arrange in a certain way, we can get a certain outcome. But a lot of things have to go right for that outcome to happen. And then we see the things like in the federal Senate with Ricky Muir getting elected on a small portion of the vote, because the chances of him actually winning were very, very small.
Mm.
But because everyone thought he was going to lose, they gave him a preference.
Mm.
And, of course, that built up to get him a position. That, in my view, is not necessarily terrible, because democracy works well when there's a lot of people in and around the table with different views. Now it will limit that to such a degree that actually there'll be lesser views around the table because those preferences won't be free-flowing right down to the last party. Obviously, we might come into the fray a little earlier because people may very well consider us in their top 6 parties that they would actually like to see get a position.
So why would a double dissolution be so good for the Christian Democratic Party in terms of the numbers? Have you come close to getting a federal seat before?
Yes, that's a good point. Like, because of the preference deals and the way they work, we've missed out on several occasions just by one seat. So we came number 7 rather than number 6. So if there's a double dissolution, that allows us to maybe pick up one of those final 6 seats in the federal Senate.
Okay, so Fred Nile missed out by just one seat in a previous election on getting into federal parliament.
My understanding, I think in 2004, the Honourable Reverend Fred Nile missed out by one. In 2007, I believe that myself missed out by one.
Yep.
And then in 2010, I think I missed out by 2 positions for memory.
Mm.
So we've always come very, very close. And of course, the sort of trouble that we're seeing in the federal Senate, where people, minor parties are not really working with the government today, we have a fantastic track record in New South Wales, where we came in and New South Wales was in dire straits. We held the balance of power. Now New South Wales is the leading economy. So you can actually work very effectively with crossbench parties if they're willing to participate with the government of the day.
What would you say as to the question, why do we need a Christian Democratic representative in federal parliament?
Well, I think, Claire, many years ago, of course, the Judeo-Christian faith was a very, very big part of Australia's history. And, of course, more and more as progressive parties come in, that is getting diluted. What it really allows for us to certainly do is, without being ashamed of it, we can bring our Christian values to the table of democracy. So it's not the only worldview, but it's a representative of a worldview held by many. And we're able to unapologetically bring those values through to make, good legislation better.
Can we talk for a second about Family First? Now, they're a separate Christian party, and often the Christian Democratic Party is criticised for not cooperating with them or merging or giving each other preferences. Why is that? Why are there separate Christian parties?
Well, a couple of things. Some people absolutely feel led to run for parties or start parties. I think the Honourable Andrew Evans did that with Family First in South Australia. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Honourable Reverend Fred Nile did that in New South Wales. And we've had numerous individuals that have started up Christian parties. Now, the problem is, Claire, no one likes to lose. When you start a party, you run it to win a position.
Of course.
Unfortunately, to win a position in any level of state or federal government is very, very hard and takes a lot of votes. So we're very fortunate that we've got 35 years behind us, and we have tried to work with other Christian parties, and Family First particular, I know I tried to work very hard with them, but the problem for them is that we contain so many votes out in New South Wales particular, hundreds of thousands of votes, that they wouldn't even get a look in if they were to put us as number two and we put them as number two. So they would tend to put us, something like below 20. And we would put them at number two. The benefit of the relationship is all their way because they're trying to get a snowball of votes to get across the line, whereas if they gave us number two, we would quickly consume all their votes and be in the leading seat to win a position on state or federal parliament. So a lot of Christian parties choose not to give the minor party, as we are, a higher preference, because it would really set us up to maybe be a bit stronger than we could be if they put us further down the track.
I was reading something by the ABC political analyst Anthony Green, and he said this new system of voting the Senate in will actually force the micro parties to cooperate more. And he said maybe we'll see one Christian morals party rather than five and so on. And they might have to negotiate more seriously. Do you see that happening with some of the smaller Christian parties?
Well, I think what we're starting to see is with the preference whisperer is certainly hard at work. And I think for the first time in history, we're seeing progressive parties working with all parties, that being the Shooters, Fishers, Farmers Party, and also the other micro parties that are on board too, because for the first time ever, they feel like many of them are going to be taken out of the race because the Greens have done a fairly good deal with the Liberal National Party on this matter, that it's really going to be hard to win a seat. So they will need to come together and they will need to be like-minded in terms of the first point of call is winning a seat. The second point is dealing with the differences that may exist.
Well, Monday's not far away. There's crossbenchers downplaying this sitting of Parliament. Some are saying the Australian Building and Construction Commission bill will go through and we won't have a double dissolution. Others are saying it's inevitable. It's all a bit confusing. What are you expecting to see on Monday?
Well, if the senators stay with their original opinion, my guess would be there will be a denial of that legislation. Secondly, I would be thinking that Malcolm Turnbull come Monday will be very close to announcing an election. Whether it'll be double dissolution or whether it'll be just a general election, we'll be yet to see.
And there's been rumblings in Canberra that if Monday does go the way the Prime Minister is hoping, he might call an election incredibly soon, even as early as next week. Do you think that might be likely?
Well, I'd think, watch out, Anthony Green, here comes Claire. I think you'd be fairly close to what we'll see unfold on Monday, in my view.
Thanks, Paul Green. That's high praise. I wouldn't compare myself to Anthony Green by any means. But thank you very much for the chat. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Claire, for the interview.